Thanks for joining us for another episode of Beyond the Listing, where we discuss the business of real estate outside the listing environment. I'm your host, Jeremy Madore, and today I'm actually sitting with...
I'm Keith Fontaine. I am a photographer and videographer here at Madore Photography and Next Level Studios.
So you'll notice that we don't have Danielle on camera today. She refused to actually come on camera just now. She said that, it was too good for her. I'm just kidding. Obviously needs to get going to go pick up her kids at school.
That's why.
Yeah.
So she never told me why. So I filled in my own blanks.
No, of course. No, she has to be out of here at a specific time each day to go pick up her daughter off the bus.
Who needs to pick up their children?
Yeah, seriously. Kids.
Come on, guys.
Kids ruin everything.
Yeah.
Man.
Come on. Yeah. Podcast is clearly more important.
Definitely. So I'm glad that we actually get to do something a little bit different today. Yeah. And I've been looking forward to this interaction. I didn't expect it to happen today because it was, we've been juggling around different schedules and everything like that.
This will be our fourth podcast we're filming today.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's been a podcasty day.
You've had a busy day.
Yes.
And I've been doing team reviews and stuff like that. So I've had a busy couple of days, but never too busy to have good conversations.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's kind of what we're all about. It's not about photography, right, Keith?
Sometimes it is.
No, it's about, obviously the more holistic approach of making sure that we're doing something that we enjoy doing.
For sure. Yeah. Because the technique is only the prerequisite for what we do.
It totally is.
Everything else around it is what causes success. So.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So rarely is it about the actual product. It's about more the total experience, the whole business, so to speak. So. And that's, obviously a common thread, throughout our hiring process and, how we interview people and stuff like that. But, I don't want to, the photography is important as, you and I have discussed.
Yeah, it's kind of the prereq for getting in the door. Like there's a certain base level you have to achieve before you're employable, I suppose, or hireable or, bookable.
Correct.
But that alone is not what makes you successful.
Yeah. And as you and I have both experienced, we've hired people that are stellar photographers that don't translate well to this job field simply because of a lack of interaction skills or an opinion of self that is, excessive for what we're doing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of factors, of course, that are at play that impact one's ability to take good photos and be a great human.
Yeah. It's like 30% what you shoot.
Yeah.
And it's like 70% like how you interact and how you identify what the prompt is and identify what the expectation is and how you make, and also like how you make someone feel about the process,
Sure.
Like if you take fantastic photos and they're like, I don't really like the guy. Like it's you're not getting a great review.
You're falling flat.
Yeah. There's so much more to it than just that. And I think even just making the actual product, I think a lot of the success in making something that meets someone's expectations is knowing what those expectations are in the first place.
Ah, communication, you say.
And that's like, if you're not availing yourself of those expectations, like you might produce something that's excellent for a different prompt altogether.
Right.
And it might not fit the prompt that you're currently working on.
And it misses the mark. So therefore is viewed as a poor result.
Right.
Even though that on its own as a standalone, if graded underneath different metrics, it would be a stellar result.
It might be an A+.
Right.
It might be objectively perfect. It might be technically perfect.
Right.
But
it's like the architectural shots versus the real estate shots.
Right.
And one might be like, well, they're both buildings. No, not really.
Yeah.
I mean, they totally are. Different. The subject is the same. Mm-hmm. How you translate the subject is completely different.
Yeah. It's the same in portraiture too. It's like if someone wants a corporate headshot, like, and then you take some moody thing where they look like some mysterious true crime author.
You missed the mark entirely.
Yeah. And vice versa. If some true crime author who's all about hard boiled detective stories, if you photograph them in a field of flowers at the golden hour, they're probably gonna be like, why do I look so soft?
Right.
Like, so it's about understanding the creative brief, I think is like, that's like ground zero for whether or not you're going to be on the right track.
Yep.
So
it's about asking the right questions and generating the right results.
For sure.
And so that's the adaptation that we talk about in regards to the customer service end of things. Because delivering on the product is paramount to obviously the rest of the experience. But throughout that experience, it needs to ensure that the communication is there, the understanding, the ability to... put yourself in the customer's shoes and see it from their perspective as to, you know, what you want to accomplish.
Yeah. And it is, and each client has, I mean, as we've seen, like depending on zip code, depending on expectations of market, depending on what their ambition is for where they're going to use images.
You can't shoot Boston the same way as you do Concord.
You can't. And sometimes you can't even shoot Boston the same way as Boston, depending on what neighborhood you're in. You know, there's when we do like the high, like we, I did earlier this year, I got to do one in Millennium Towers in the financial district. And, you know, it's a high rise on like the 30th floor and it's got giant windows and it's all hyper modern and sleek and black and white and neutrals and stuff. And to me, that connotates a certain style. And then, you know, a two family in Southie might be a totally different thing. Yep. It might be if you shoot it in that way, they might be like, this isn't going in a magazine. Right. I need to sell the thing.
Yeah. It's dependent. It's dependent on the building, the environment that you're photographing. And of course, you know, the market that you're aiming at.
Yeah. And the use case and how they're going to use it. You know, like we see a lot of agents in like luxury markets. They'll use the images for more than just the MLS listing.
Yep.
They'll use it for to populate their website, or they'll use it to try to get the house published in Haven or in any, you know, Architectural Digest or something. Yep. And those publications expect a different thing than say MLS might expect.
Right.
You know, your big wide shot from the corner might do great for showing the size of the room, but it might not be the kind of shot that they'd put on the cover of Haven.
Right.
And so like depending on what the ambition of the agent is as far as how the house is gonna have reach, that can change how you might approach things. You know?
Good observations.
And we kind of learn over time who wants what, and you know, it's all kind of an esoteric thing, but it does all start with like just chatting with them, you know, or even just getting them talking, you know, just walking through the house and have them give you the tour.
Yeah.
Like they'll offer up a lot of information voluntarily
yep.
that you don't necessarily need to dig for if you just kind of get them on a roll.
It is about getting them on the roll.
Yeah.
And then keeping that roll going if there's like a kind of a speed bump or a silent moment by spurring the next part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Particularly if they're starting to divulge the information that would really get down to the bottom of, you know, what you're trying to do that day.
For sure.
Versus just the story of the seller. I mean, although the story of the seller might also be a large factor in that
it
too,
could. Right? Yeah, if the seller is, I mean, something I see semi-commonly is, oh, the seller is a photographer.
Oh.
And sometimes that indicates to me there's a lot of pressure. Yeah. Like, oh, you better not screw this one up, bud, because you got other professional eyes on you, but... You know, that does inform a little bit. Like, generally, I think, okay, that person probably has a visual eye for artistry and probably loves things like symmetry in a way that, like, you know, a homeowner who owns a landscaping business might not care about those esoteric things
They're
at all.
Probably going to, you know, really care about the yard photos or their hardscaping photos or whatever, right?
Yeah, and that might inform, and that probably also informs how they've maintained their house and what they care about in their house. And
yeah, it's like shooting an equestrian property.
Yeah.
Right? Very rarely is equestrian property about the house. It's more about the facilities.
Yeah, sometimes it's a tiny little farmhouse, but then it's the, you know, the 100,000 square foot riding barn that's the big deal, you know?
Yep.
And it's... Yeah,
and that's where all the energy and the expense and the time has been put.
And clearly a passionate owner, too. Like, you don't own an equestrian farm if you're not really into it.
No.
There's no way you're going to saddle all that extra saddle. Waka waka. I swear I didn't intend that. But yeah, you're not going to take on all that. Like, that's so much work.
Yeah.
It's so much work. Like, you're not going to do that unless it's something that you really draw.
Right. But then you get the hobby barns that are somewhere in between, you know, the prosumer equestrian world and the people that might have just one horse, or just, you know, casual riders or whatever. But, you know, similarly, their angle that they're selling and the intended buyer is going to be completely different, right?
It is. Yeah. The buyer is definitely going to be of a certain demographic who's also interested in it for its equestrian properties.
Yep.
So,
and that's important, especially when it comes to the video portion of our job.
For sure.
Is highlighting the amenities, the specifics, and doing it in a fashion that translates to the would-be buyer.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah, because the lifestyle becomes just as much about the whole thing, you know? Yep. Like, I know when we do video for equestrian properties, we always try to get animals in their element, because that's like the lifestyle of it, you know? Yeah. That's really part of it. And, you know, like if there's someone out riding at that time, like we always try to capture that, because that is kind of the reason you'd be there in the first place, you know? And it's, you can't separate that lifestyle from that property. They're intrinsically connected. So, yeah. And video is nice, 'cause we can show those things in a way that you would never want to spend an MLS slot on.
Yeah.
You know, if you only get 42, is it like, are we really going to use the picture of the horse sticking his head out from the paddock?
Generally not.
Probably not. Maybe you might it'll use go it on social
media.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like the video gives us that opportunity, 'cause we're not taking up a finite slot.
Right.
So
a link is a link is a link.
Exactly. And yeah. It's 2 seconds yep. in a 2.5 minute video. It's, yep. it stops. It's the real estate it's occupying is less.
Right. But it adds enormous amounts of flavor to what mm-hmm. you're doing with the video.
For sure.
Whereas with the photography, it might not add as much flavor because sure. the flavor might be within the description itself or mm-hmm. just simply the data-based specs of the property. Right. Yeah. Because that's obviously the demographic of MLS advertising is generally not so much from a marketing as much as it is a broadcast information display.
Yeah, they're like an aggregator more than they are right. a marketing platform. It's like a right. just a centralized kind of yeah. It's yeah, that's why MLS photos tend to be a little more pragmatic mm-hmm. in their approach. And mm-hmm. then, you know, it's the bigger swings that creative stuff tends to live more on socials
right.
and live more in like the personal marketing of an agent yep. than it does like that tied to that MLS listing thing.
Right, which really highlights the significant strides that have been made in the video realm. Over
sure.
over the past 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. you know, you and I, so you've been with us, I think 8 years this year.
It'll be seven in April.
Yeah. 7 in April. Okay. All right. Getting ahead of myself. So, you know, I've been doing this for 11 years, 12 in November. Mm-hmm. And so you've been with us the longest out of everybody. Mm-hmm. You've seen the largest arc in behavior changes, mm-hmm. Between the, so 7 years ago would have put us at the 2017 market. Mm-hmm. And so 2017 to 2024, there's been a significant slide, not a slide, a significant increase in behavior changes in regards to technology.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 2017, video was not really even a thing.
It was oddball stuff. It was done by a couple forward-thinking people, but mm-hmm. it wasn't anywhere near widespread adoption.
Right. And so, you know, these were also the days before, you know, large aggregator sites really took hold of the market demographics. Mm-hmm. And so as those changes have happened, you know, we've also changed, you know, along the way, adopting new technologies, adapting to the market requirements. And video has actually been probably the largest adjustment that we've encountered. Mm-hmm. Floor plans have remained pretty much the same.
Yeah.
The way that we capture photos has definitely improved, and the way that we edit has
improved.
We've
updated gear since we first started. We use different rigs.
Right, but it's still photography.
Yeah, and it's the core principles are largely the same.
Yep.
I mean, I think we've probably shoot with a little more mind towards luxury demographics, just kind of by default now. I think that has maybe more to do with just our client list changing over the years than anything, as opposed to a market trend in general. But
that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, that is curious. But I know that
it's like a chicken egg situation, right?
Yeah, that used to be like something we would try to introduce to someone after they had been here for a while.
Yeah,
and it's now something that we try to prime people for right off the bat.
Yep.
And I imagine part of that is just that we're in luxury markets more often now than we were 7 years ago.
Also, I think that there's a lot of agents that are taking more critical care of their listings.
That's true.
And presenting them such.
I have definitely observed like staging prep has become more widespread.
Yep.
Or at least like staging prep to like a high hands-on degree.
Sure.
Where like the house is...
The standards changed.
Yeah. Like it definitely like I remember many years ago like it was kind of a dice roll what a house would generally look like, even from like the same group or the same agent. And now I can think of a bunch of agents on our client list where I just know that everything is going to be pro staged.
So the consistency and the expectations or the regularity has improved
for sure.
Yeah.
And then that allows us to take a slightly different approach with photography.
It's true
because we're not fighting against huge furniture. We're not fighting against clutter. We're not avoiding certain angles because of a defect in the staging or
we're
something.
Able to leverage our time on site a lot better.
Yeah, for sure. And usually we have many more options available mm-hmm. to us because mm-hmm. of that. Even just decluttering opens up a bunch of options, but having great staging on top of that also opens up a ton of shots that wouldn't exist otherwise.
Yep. And so that's all part of the behavior change that, you know, we were just trying to talk about in regards to the video, but it also lends specifically to the video.
It does.
Because although that staging is, you know, it's awesome to capture for photography, but that video really is enhanced significantly further, I think, mm-hmm. versus unstaged property.
Absolutely.
So I think that the delta between the quality of an unstaged versus a staged property is more present in the video than it is in photography.
Oh, and it's now affecting two services rather than one too.
Correct.
So it does.
So you get
your bang for
mileage.
Your buck is incredible.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. For sure. And it's nice too, because video can, again, do things that you wouldn't waste an MLS slot on.
Sure.
You know, like if you have great staging in your dining room and then you have a view from your dining room through the slider out to your well-staged like cabana pool area, like we can highlight that in a really nice tight little close-up shot. you know, that really shows that connection. And that's not something I think an agent would ever use an MLS slot on for a still photo.
Yep.
But in video, that can exist.
Translates to a really good amenity lifestyle there.
It does, yeah. Because, again, that's like, how would it feel to live here as opposed to, like, here's all the information about the room. Yep. You know, it elicits more of an emotional response from the viewer. And that's something that you can't always do on MLS because you might be limited, especially if you have a big house in a luxury market. Like, you're going to be hard-pressed to fit all the bedrooms into the set of photos because there's seven of them, you know, and they all have en suites or something. Yep. Whereas video, we can make those little connections because it's a small amount of time.
Yeah.
It's kind of a drop in the bucket when it comes to like the runtime.
Yeah, one to two seconds of pan per bedroom can get it all in there really easily.
That's true. Yeah, you can chew through that stuff quick. And some agents they're embracing the idea that it's a teaser. Yep. And they're like, you know what? You don't need to show the bedrooms other than the primary.
Yeah, because it's already listed as seven bedroom in there.
Yeah, and they'll see the listing photos and I'm definitely seeing that trend in video, which is like it differentiating itself from photography. In its application a little bit, in that it's providing something different than the photography, as opposed to this is largely the similar approach to photography, but in a different format that's maybe digestible by clicking one button rather than clicking an arrow repeatedly to cycle through. Whereas I think a lot more agents I'm seeing now are asking for shorter videos that actually show less. Okay. And that it, with the intent to tease.
Right.
With the intent to like, it's the coming soon trailer.
Trailer, I think, is a very good way of describing it.
Yeah.
And those would primarily be those incentivizing kind of reels that really, or we say reels, sorry, you know, the short form videos specifically aimed at whetting the appetite.
Yeah, for sure. Right? It just puts you in the vibe of the place for a little bit, just to pique your interest enough to go look at the MLS listing or do a drive-by or call the agent or something like that.
Now, so you touched upon lifestyle and amenities. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, the short form video. We talked a little bit about, you know, whetting of the appetite, et cetera. how can an agent properly influence the video outcome so that they are making sure that they are presenting it in a way. So we've seen people get on camera talking a little bit.
Quite a bit more lately, actually.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so it's great.
So from an agent involvement standpoint, how can they further along that mindset and make it more successful for themselves?
As in when they're getting on camera, what can they do to...
Maybe not just on camera, but their expectations and how to market it, et cetera. Like, because as these technologies are shifting, we're also experiencing that they're jumping off the MLS platform and just going straight to social media with
it's
them.
It's true, yeah. People are going straight to YouTube or socials. That does beg your... What we're seeing right now is definitely a shift into vertical formats. Like, that's definitely going to be a shift, and we're definitely kind of in the middle of it at the moment. But that is something you want to ask yourself before you hire video, is where am I intending on using this? Because that will inform how we shoot it, how you decide what length it's going to be, what orientation it's going to be, and that those are decisions you at least want to mull over in advance.
Yeah, because you can't undo that sometimes.
Right. Once we've shot the thing vertical, there's no going back to getting
it horizontal.
Exactly. Yeah. And we can shoot it horizontal and cut it vertical. It won't
not the same quality.
It won't be the resolution will be a lot lower. And then the shots will be much tighter, which is results in shots where you feel like you can't really see the whole room.
Right. Because the mindset approach to it, how you record it, is entirely different horizontal and vertical, as we've tested multiple times.
Yeah, we've gone through every permutation you can.
We have.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, you know, this has been, you know, years in the making to get to where we are, obviously. And we haven't arrived here accidentally. These have been all intentional steps.
We've tried basically everything you can.
Exhaustive.
Yeah. And what we've come up with is the only real great way to do it is just to do it in camera the way it should be.
Correct.
You know, we've tried all the, can we shoot it this way and then make multiple things out of it? And you can, but it's not like... One is clearly going to be the way it was intended to be shot, and one is clearly going to be the thing we pulled from that after the fact.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that is something that you want to consider, because if you want the best result, we should shoot it with that in mind.
Yep.
And having doing that later will never be as good as if we had intended to do it that way in the first place.
Frequently, we compare photography and videography to cooking.
Yeah.
Right. You can have the same ingredients and have a completely different dish in the end. You know.
It is.
And that's essentially what we're dealing with here.
You get some short rib and you want it to be fall off the bone tender, you got to go low and slow. And if you want it to be like a steak, you got to do it hot and fast. And once you're halfway through one, you can't pivot to the other. It's too late.
You can't switch it. You could try.
You try.
But the outcome is not going to be the same.
Everyone's probably going to know.
You can't take an awesome plate of spaghetti meatball and turn it into a casserole.
Right. Well, I suppose you could. It might be a mushy casserole. Well,
that's the point though, right? So like, you know, if you try to do it afterwards, you're going to have a real hit or miss, you know, impact.
It'll always be less than it could have been.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously the short rib versus steak comparison is probably more drastic than anything else, right?
Yeah.
But that's like making a photo into a slideshow.
It's true. Yeah.
Versus recording video.
Versus doing video in the first place. Yeah.
Right.
Because it's not going to be the same. You're not going to get the, well, the big thing you miss with the slideshow is the interconnectivity. Yep. You know, we try very hard to
flow.
Yeah. To flow from one space to another, to whether that's a literal connection where we literally move the camera from one place to another, or if it's just like setting up sight lines between places to establish where we're going.
Expectation and such.
It's definitely easier to follow a walkthrough video, I think, for a user who's unfamiliar with the property. Especially if it's unique, than it is to follow a slideshow, because it doesn't do that. Like, I teleport to another room, and now where am I? Yep. Is this upstairs? Is this downstairs?
Yeah, it's disorienting.
For sure.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, vacant properties or properties that are partially staged but have vacant rooms.
Yep. Lacking specific features that differentiate room to room. Yep.
Yeah, it was actually, I was doing a floor plan edit yesterday, and there was a, we shot four different units in a building in Boston. And I wanted to go double check something. And then when I pulled up the photos,
you're like, what's what?
All the units were vacant
and
they were all painted flat gray in every room. And I was like, I'm never going to find the room I'm working for.
Nope.
I think there was like 320 photos and they were all.
to be fair, it was in fact a four unit. And they're all condos sold separately.
Yeah.
And so it was a large appointment to begin with. But that is
one of the limitations of photos, is that the only context they possess is what's in the photo.
Right.
Whereas the video, you can include a lot of that context because it's just one frame to the right, you know? And so, that's part of the power of that. And I think especially in like a unique or a property that like might be confusing to just digest in single chunks of single photos, like that video might be the fix to that.
Yep.
And that, because it's you can see those literal connections by making them literal.
Sure.
And then, you know, if you ever have a vacant property and you get a feedback, it's like, oh, I feel lost when looking at the pictures. Like maybe video would have been the solution to that in that case, you know.
And obviously, you know, physical in-person staging is a huge element of
that
as well.
Oh, it does, because that gives you touchstones. It lets you feel scale better.
Yep.
Yeah.
The right stager will understand the need for those separate spaces to have their own individual personalities, or at least the implied use of the room, which is enough of a differentiator sometimes to create that.
Oh, being like, oh, well, that's the nursery, that room. Like it's instantly that now sticks in the head of the audience in a way that's much more permanent than that was in the gray room with three windows or four.
That's exactly it, right? So it assigns a use to that room, which helps imply the lifestyle and the purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And it's important to acknowledge that. Now, one of the other trends has been, so we'll get back to the digital, get back to the video related stuff in a moment. One of the other trends that we've noticed is the advent of virtual staging.
Mm-hmm. I just had an agent yesterday. They were like, I can't believe how good that looks. I remember a couple years ago, it looked like a cartoon. And we're like, it's pretty nuts.
So let's talk about the pros and cons, because that's a hot button topic for a lot of our staging vendor relationships, right? And they see it as a this or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in actuality, that's not quite what it is.
Yeah, because it's not a replacement.
Because
I think the biggest impact of staging is when you're standing in the room.
Correct.
And I think that while virtual staging maybe might replace it in a sense for a photo appointment, although frankly, I don't think it will, because if someone were to stage every picture in every room, it would probably cost almost as much as hiring a stager.
Yep.
So I can't imagine agents doing that. Most agents who hire a virtual staging, they do a handful of images.
Yeah, they do three or four.
Right. And it's the high button areas, and usually the rest of the photos in those rooms
are
still unstaged.
Yep. And they'll show the rest of the photos, normally speaking.
Right. They'll stage five, and then 42 will end up in MLS.
Right.
So it's not really replacing staging as a service, because that agent probably wasn't going to hire staging anyways.
Most likely. That's kind of the point that I was trying to get to. And so it's interesting to see the divide in realtors who do the virtual versus the regulars, versus the in-person rather staging, and we have noticed that, you know, there is that clear divide,
right?
And So it's comforting to know that it's not eroding. It's by and large not eroding the base of clients from the in-person staging companies.
For sure.
Because that's alive and well. And
it is. Yeah. We see that. I actually see that more frequently over the years.
Yep.
And that's probably just because as more agents employ it, more agents are like, well, geez, I gotta keep up. Like,
take a look at our video statistics.
It's true. Yeah.
Over 20% of our listings include some form of video. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking slideshow. We're talking about, you know, walkthrough or social or even just drone. And so that's a not insignificant statistic.
For sure. It's definitely, it's enough that it's definitely a market trend and not like an outlier thing.
Correct. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about outlier thing.
Yeah.
What's become an outlier thing that was not quite expected on a national scale is Matterport.
Yeah, it's not popular around here.
So Matterport has the same, it's not comparable, but it has the same investigative properties to it as a walkthrough video could if the walkthrough video was exhaustive.
Yeah.
Right?
If you did a walkthrough video that was like 5 minutes plus, probably, yeah.
Right. So if you're doing a full form walkthrough video, MLS, slow-based virtual tour, mm-hmm. where it really truly explored
hands around the home, each and every corner of every room.
Which up until the past few years was fairly commonplace for some of...
That's what we were doing most of the time before there started to be the desire for shorter, more trailer-esque videos. But yeah.
So Matterport is comparable to that in its research-based window, right? So if you're looking at it from a let's go tour the home in its entirety, the old walkthrough video and the Matterport were comparable overall in their intended purpose or use in the end. However, now that we're looking at video as more of an advertising tool to get people really interested in looking at the place, by having a little bit more of a limited view of the property for just strictly the highlights or strictly the best of the best,
right?
Matterport is no longer comparable at all because it's
not
more,
being used the same way anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Because it's not a highlight reel or it's not an excitable thing.
Yeah, it's not like a tightly curated thing.
It's information driven.
Here's everything. Right. Peruse it. You know, it's like handing someone the whole file cabinet.
Right.
Like, go ahead and leaf through. Like, there you go.
Yep.
And you know, it has a lot of value in that respect. I mean, we definitely saw it during COVID. It was the sight unseen out of state.
It's funny.
Oh my God, they love Matterport.
Let me share some statistics with you, right? So during COVID, MLS PIN out of in Massachusetts, they required virtual tours with all of the property listings. And it was for a short period of time, especially during the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, to keep things flowing while showings couldn't happen.
Well, right. So because they were requiring that, people, you know, some people opted just for the, you know, slideshow video. Mm-hmm. MLS quickly cracked down on that one and said, no, you know, either a walkthrough video or a Matterport.
Yeah, because it lacks some of that context outside the frame.
Correct, right. So what ended up happening was we saw our adoption of Matterport go through the roof for a very short period of time.
Huge spike.
Enormous spike. It was like 25-30% of our listings were including Matterport.
Yeah, we were doing it like 5-6 times a day, like every day out of nowhere.
Exactly.
I guess not out of nowhere. We probably could have seen it coming. But. No.
Right. But to be honest, we weren't prepared for that because it arrived at our doorstep real fast.
Yeah. And who's, you know, what business is prepared to completely pivot their offerings with like a week's notice,
right,
you know?
Right. So the Delta changed though. This is the interesting thing. You know, we were doing around 4 or 5% of our listings had Matterport prior to COVID. It spiked to 20-25%.
Yeah.
And then it fell back down to its resting.
As soon as we had open houses again.
Now we're around 3-4% again. Yep.
So it's even lower than it was pre-COVID now.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Meanwhile, video spiked during COVID, mm-hmm. as could be expected. Mm-hmm. So it's either you did video or you did Matterport. That's pretty much
a lot of agents do both.
The rule. It's the rule of thumb or the general trend. So it spiked during COVID and then it came back down to like 18% ish adoption. And now we're back up to 21-22, which is pretty much where it was during COVID.
Right.
So we're seeing a return to those statistics, which is interesting.
Yeah.
For 2020. So here we are 4 years later, returning to 2020 stats as far as performances. So that's an interesting trend that we've seen, but Matterport resting again at 3-4, you know, maybe 5% depending on the month. Is especially a brain scratcher because the use for the tool is actually pretty good in that it's like you just said, perfect for out of state buyers. Yep. So relos, you know, people that have large scale developments are a huge use for them.
Yeah, we see a lot of it for, we'll do like a model home for a complex that's about to be built. We'll do the model home and then they'll use that tour for potential buyers.
Yep. 24/7 walkthrough, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, we've done a fair amount of those. I know there's that place out west we've been doing, and then there's a couple new complexes. We'll go in when the model's almost done.
Yep.
And then that will, you know, it'll be, usually we'll name it for them, like, oh, this is the contemporary farmhouse model. Right. And then they'll use that on their website or on their marketing persistently. Materials.
Yeah. And then we'll park it persistently so that it doesn't expire, so that they have that renewable use of the technology. And so we try to do that for our clients so that they have a long-term tool. Just like when you download the photo, you can upload it to your website and stuff like that. And so the whole point to all of this, though, is to help market the agent as well as the listings.
Sure.
In addition to ensuring that the buyers have all the information at their fingertips so that it's an informed transaction.
Yeah, you'll never get, the only thing better than a Matterport is seeing it yourself.
Yeah.
That's the next step. It's as close as you can get to that. And I'm curious where tech will go, because it is like, Matterport does look nice. It's definitely not one-to-one, like, wow, that looks like I'm actually there yet. I'm curious how long it'll be before that's the case.
Yeah, VR.
Yeah, I'm curious.
So Matterport is VR compatible.
It is, yeah.
Right? So you can still, you know, put on your headset and walk through.
Yeah.
The challenge, though, is that VR primarily has been used as an entertainment platform.
Yeah, it's not something people are shopping on.
No, generally.
Yeah.
Currently.
Yeah.
But then again, take a look at the QR code.
Yeah, that's true.
Pre-COVID, QR codes are like, why do you need that?
Yeah.
And then since COVID, QR code has been the thing for all information
sharing. We put them on all our flyers.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah.
You know, it's become synonymous with camera apps. So like, it used to be that the camera app didn't recognize
QR code. You need a QR app specifically. Correct. Yeah. And now all the phones come default with scanning.
Yep. You go to a restaurant and they have that, you know, contactless QR code right there at the hostess, you know, stand or whatever, in trade for, or as an option to the menu. And prior to COVID, that wasn't a thing. So it's very interesting to see the technology changes that we've experienced together, you and I, and have had to, educate and train for and find solutions for.
Yeah. It's funny. Like when I started, like the amount of tech I had to learn was relatively small considering to what our hires these days. Like there's like twice as many devices.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's systems. Like
here's
to
your
learn.
Camera, your tripod, and your iPad.
Yeah.
And then eventually drone. Okay, fine.
Yep.
And then your video camera. Oh, okay.
Yep.
And gimbal. Matterport.
And Matterport camera.
Yep. So
and your separate hardware to mount all of these things. And
yeah.
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 It is. It's definitely it's a lot. But also like our people are also like walking one person production crews. It's pretty cool. Like
it is pretty awesome.
It's pretty cool that we can send one person and do like 4 hours of every service that exists in real estate, basically. Like it's they're like one person production teams. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's heartwarming to see that kind of, that kind of production level, come out of our newer hires. You know, it's obviously something that, you know, you somewhat expect someone who's been here a while to do, right? Cause like they acclimate, but to get a new hire to acclimate to our baseline, business, they have to do photos, floor plan and drone right off the bat.
Almost. Yeah. Cause those are our heavy adopters. We do those. I mean, I do one of those every day.
Yep.
So,
yep. Now your market obviously is different than your typical new hire, right? Because you're working in larger homes in higher price points.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
Obviously there's the outliers or whatever, but
I mean, even in the sticks.
Yep.
I mean, actually in the sticks, we see drone all the time. Frankly, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've done land or house with acreage.
That's
or,
very true.
You know, house with, oh, there's a view of Mount Monadnock and make sure you capture that. And that's so that, I mean, you know, you can be in Winchendon at a house that's $180,000 and they might still do drone because it's totally relevant to what that's they're
true.
Doing, you know?
That's true. But can you get a house in Winchendon for
$180,000? Probably not anymore. I need to update my numbers. It's probably more sure like, that, it's probably
I'm not sure that's
now.
Entirely accurate.
Engineer Dylan, can you Google that real quick?
Yeah, right. No, I think It's been a while since I've been.
That's there's probably nothing under 200.
It's probably closer anymore. 275 plus. I'm guessing.
I did one in Winchendon. And it was 199, like a couple of months ago.
Okay, so like, maybe so 199 like in Winchendon is what Dylan did.
Yeah, it was like a month ago.
Okay, what style of home was it?
It was
Ranch Cape?
Split level.
Split level? Okay, yeah. Raise Run. Right,
okay, right. So okay. They're out there.
All right. So they're maybe I'm knocking you unnecessarily.
Sub 200 just barely exists still.
That's funny. I'm sure that, you know, whatever community is applicable for that, you know, there's going to be your lower price points, but they still need to be marketed effectively.
For sure. And sometimes that's just what you have to do. I mean, anytime I go out to land and they only ordered ground photography,
you know that I'm it's just not. Like, it's not where it needs
this
to be.
This is a picture of trees.
Yeah. The humanity side of me is like, I want to just launch the drone just so I can help you.
Sometimes I do.
And that's fine. We don't need to tell your boss that.
Yeah. Well, just because like when you're standing on the ground, you can see 10
that's
trees
it.
Deep?
And
if it's 50 acres that stretches for...
It gives you no context for what you're actually whatsoever. Looking at.
There's no
maybe
scale.
Maybe you can see like a rock wall and a tote road or whatever. So yeah. It shows maybe the cut in or whatever. But that's the best you're going to get.
Yeah, like if you have like, you know, if like you've already got a septic plant in place and you have the pit dug or something, then sure, that makes sense from the ground. But
right.
I mean, for land, like if you're not shooting it from the air, like...
Agreed.
How can you see it?
Agreed. So a lot of people don't know that we have like a standalone drone option. They just see it as like, you know, you order drone and you're going to get maybe video or whatever. So there's a lot of like, you know, misnomers with
that is, we see that right? with Matterport and video too. They're like, give me the tour.
Yeah, exactly.
I want and the house like, tour. And it's well,
please explain a little bit further.
Yeah. Place, it could be know? Several different things. And right. it probably can be confusing because there's a lot of, if you're not familiar with,
there's
the tech,
a lot of terminology.
There is. Yeah.
Right. And so what we're going to be doing is, we're going to be trying to update our pricing, on our website, so that it's more, digestible in that when you land on the pricing page, so you're looking at the services, you can get there and say, I have need for these specific services and each one of them should have like a mouse over so that you can like pop up and see a description of the services. Mm-hmm. So you select the services that you're looking for, you put in your, square footage that you're doing for that property. And then it should spit out a total package price based on your selection. So we're going to be modifying our services page so that it's a little bit better at least describing and providing the information that people are looking for. But in actuality, what needs to happen is we need to have conversations with clients and really talk about what the advantages are of specific marketing technologies.
For right? sure.
And so the drone is sometimes one of the most often overlooked ones.
Oh, and certain applications of it too. Like a drone doesn't have to be a shot from 400 feet.
Right.
A lot of the best shots are from 15 and it's, or maybe they're from 5 feet, but a person couldn't stand there because the lot slopes or there's a body of water there, or maybe the best shot is floating.
How many times have you taken a nice dead on shot of a colonial home that's on a slight embankment and it's been like the lead photo from a drone that's hovering 20 feet above you because it slopes.
Yep.
Otherwise you're just looking straight up.
I had a house yesterday where the shot I wanted in the back would involve me standing in the pool.
Yep.
So
not possible.
Drone has no issue with that.
Nope.
So
nope.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have a little portable magic carpet.
It is. You know? Yeah. Well, and especially for video, it's nice because it's like, there's some yards where it's like, how am I going to get that shot smooth?
Yep.
How on earth am I going to?
Yeah. There's like, too much variability.
Yeah. There's too many lumps. It goes up, it goes down.
You twist an ankle.
Yeah. It's muddy. It's slippery. Whereas the drone is just like,
muddy.
I'm good, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no like, quicksand for you there.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So. Yeah, so. And you can do fun trick shots too. Like we like to do the start at 400 feet and fly all the way to the front door kind of thing. Like you can do fun stuff like that, which is cool.
And it gives a good context to where the house is situated in relation to town or nearby you know, water bodies or anything like that.
Or and local then, amenities. I had one yesterday. I had a couple pit stops with the drone that were, you know, quarter mile away each. From right where I was doing the flight, I just flew over. It was like a school, there's a shopping plaza, restaurants, like that stuff, especially when you get closer out in Middlesex County and closer to the city, like that stuff becomes really relevant.
Very.
You know, like why would you buy in North Andover versus Andover? Maybe it's what's nearby.
Yep.
Maybe it's the neighborhood you're in. Maybe it's
the commutability.
Sometimes
showing the highway is actually what's desired.
For sure.
Other times we want to avoid it.
There's like a dividing line. I almost think of like Route 95 as the dividing line, whereas outside it, they're like, don't show the highway.
Sure.
For the love of God, don't show the highway. And then you go inside it and they're like, oh, Route 2's
there.
Show
how fast you can get to the highway.
Yeah. Look, it's straight shot to downtown.
Because road noise is a given its zip code.
It is. Right? If you're in Medford, it's going to be louder than it is in Winchendon, period.
You don't try to advertise in Medford for
peace and quiet,
solitary environment, right?
No, seclusion. The hustle bustle's the point.
Exactly.
Actually, I remember I had a Boston agent one. We were filming in Charlestown And I was like, oh, I'm going to land the drone and like wait 15 minutes. He's like, why? I was like, well, there's an ambulance like going down the street. And like, I see some police lights over there. He's like, it's Boston, man. Yep. Why would like, no, leave it no, in.
It's part of the environment.
He's like, it's a, why yep. would you buy in Charlestown if you didn't want hustle bustle?
Right.
What's
right.
the, you know?
Yeah. When you buy urban, you're expecting urban.
For right? sure. Yeah.
And then of course you have like the urban luxury markets where you still need to embrace a part of that mm-hmm. while also showing the inside that abode lifestyle, the, yeah. you know, everything.
Well, sometimes that's the vibe so. Too. It's you're in the concrete jungle, but then here's your little refuge. Oasis yep. in the middle of it. Yep. You know, look how private it is, even though it's steps to,
for sure.
to the south end or for something, sure. you know?
So check out this rooftop deck.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. yeah. Those are always fun.
Yeah.
I think I've only ever done one rooftop deck.
Oh,
one
I've,
or two.
I've done a dozen plus.
I got to do one in the back bay.
Okay.
It was like a block from the Charles. That yep. was pretty slick.
Yep.
That was awesome.
Yep. I did one just across the way from the runway from Logan. I was in Winthrop.
Oh, you probably yeah. couldn't do drone.
I did drone up to 90 feet. That's where it capped out.
Yeah. Cause usually they employ that limit, but
so
that's but funny. Yeah. I know East Boston's always tough cause it's just the proximity.
Right. Exactly. So I was in Winthrop and, you know, so some people don't know, Our limitation. Actually, that's a good segue.
Oh, to
our drone limitations.
Yeah,
let's talk a little bit about the legality of things. So, yep. so first and foremost.
Well, first disclaimer: if you're in Bedford, oh, run the address by us first
with Hanscom Air
because Force Hanscom Base. Is extremely yeah. particular and, about their airspace
and areas of Concord.
Yeah, you know? And the Bedford side of Concord. Yep. So actually, if you're in Concord and you have a house that abuts Great Meadow, we probably can't fly drone.
Right.
Unfortunately, because Great Meadow is gorgeous.
And Minuteman National Park.
Minuteman is its own thing, but that is yep. its own federal no-fly zone.
Yep. Yep. And so these are actual FAA legal requirements that we have they to are. Abide by.
Not only abide by, but our drones physically won't allow us to bypass.
Because we of would. A technology called geofencing.
Yes.
Right. And so we've talked about all the technology advancements that we've observed. That's been an actual very critical one
yeah.
because back when we first started doing yeah. drones with like the Phantom 3, mm-hmm. geofencing wasn't a thing.
Yeah. You could easily just fly near an airport.
Very much.
They'd know you're there because of radio and radar and stuff, but right. it, your drone wouldn't be remotely like, no, leave.
No. So. And then on top of that, there's the remote ID, mm-hmm. which is actually embedded in the drone. Mm-hmm. So the FAA or the nearby airports that might be tracking you mm-hmm. know who the operator is. Yep. And so these are very real situations that a drone operator could find themselves in legal trouble. Absolutely. And that's why we have a very strict policy of obeying whatever the software provides. Yep. Trying to gamify that by getting loopholes and, you know, hoops that we're jumping through is going to only end up in disaster for our company
yeah.
and eventually the client.
To be frank, I don't even know what loophole you would. Because like even if you launch outside airspace, it will detects. Stop you when you pass the boundary.
Yeah, there's loopholes on it.
I'm sure you could probably change the firmware on your drone or something.
And, that's obviously one of them.
Yeah.
You know, but there's also ways to intercept the radio waves and yeah. run interference.
But we don't do those things.
But we don't do those things. Because it's not worth it. It's not worth losing our license. Not worth getting involved in issues. And furthermore, the safety aspect.
There's
of
a
it.
Reason that's the rule in the first place.
Correct.
Which is, you correct. Know.
We do need to protect those pilots. We need to protect, you know, the aircraft that's launching. So
and we're not going to be the example that makes Congress pass some very specific restrictions.
No,
that
no.
can be some other chump can be the guy who makes that happen.
We want to make news for only good reasons.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and that's the thing is like, it's the outside of geofencing, like it's relatively easy for us to do what we need to do for drones.
Yep.
And if people are irresponsible and try to circumvent that stuff, you best believe there'll be legislation that makes doing our job a whole lot more difficult.
Yep. So it's in the best interest of all photography and media production companies to yeah. abide by the rules that are for set sure. forth and I would say enforced, even though there are, you know, workarounds, enforced by the software that we employ.
And I am glad that geofencing's a thing because I mean I've read several news stories about people being idiots around airports with yep. drones and it's yep. it's bad news. I remember reading one where they had to redirect a bunch of flights from Chicago to Denver.
Yeah.
Because there was a guy with
that's
a drone.
That's disastrous. Wow.
Can you imagine?
Chicago to Denver. Talk about ruining your day. It's ruining your vacation, oh, yep. ruining your business trip, maybe even losing some sales.
Oh, yeah.
Like, depending on what you're going for.
Imagine the
for.
Stress on those pilots who's like, we had enough for gas sure. to get to Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess they don't call it gas on a plane, do they? Right. It's fuel.
But I don't know.
If you're a pilot, write in. And
yeah, write in and let us know. Yeah. So there's all of that. So it's important that we honor these technologies and not just the geofencing, but also like how to use these technologies the best the best purpose for them, mm-hmm. and help arm our clients with the application.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah. I think if they're more familiar with what this technology can do, they probably are more likely to come up with cool creative ideas
yep.
for how to use it.
It's true. You know? It's true. And that's the best thing that we've seen happen in the past 4 years mm-hmm. is that these technologies are being adapted in very creative ways mm-hmm. Throughout the world. And we're observing these trends that are happening. Some of them are just, you know, flares in the pan
yeah.
and others are tried and true marketing principles that we can apply, you know, such as the short form video that mm-hmm. really gets a lot of views on social media.
It does.
You know, and think about what that does, because it's not just about selling the home at that point. You're selling the agent.
Yeah. It's right? much about growing your page reach and growing your personal reach as it is anything else.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so if agents are really looking to enhance their own personal marketing in hopes of getting more sellers or buyers, one of the best ways they can do that is to have double duty on some of their marketing strategies for their listings so that they can use them perpetually personally.
Yeah. It is true. And that can be the approach of how we take photographs so that they have use beyond just MLS.
Yep.
That can be
some stock photography esque kind of things.
Yeah. You can photograph stuff in a different way so that it's not as much about the room as a whole and maybe about some feature or some aspect of it or the staging or something. And that stuff is useful in places that it might not be on MLS. I mean, that can be video, just having creative ideas. You know, like if you're going to go on camera, having a seed of an idea is a really good thing. Cause then we end up getting to collaborate on some cool creative idea
yeah.
as opposed to like, how do we get through this video and have it be serviceable?
Yeah.
Like I hear an attitude sometimes that people will be like, oh, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, or I don't want to overreach and tell you what to do. And I feel the opposite about it. Yeah. I love it when I show up and they're like, I have this crazy idea.
Do it.
I love that.
100%. Because that's what allows us to grow and reinvigorate our own
for sure.
professions.
Well, and then we just jump right in the pool too. We're like, oh, awesome, let's go.
Yeah.
Like,
and sometimes then, it's physically jumping in the pool. Just
not physically jumping in the pool, but sometimes
or watching someone jump in the pool.
Yeah, and well, sometimes there's a large physical aspect to it, and like that's okay. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, because it's a lot of times it's, are you up for this today kind of thing?
For sure.
And
the answer is almost always yes.
Yes.
For me, at least.
Yeah, that's no, true. It's true. Some preparation is obviously nice if we know that there's a curveball coming at us.
Yeah.
So I think
having those thoughts in advance, like starting with nothing means that we're putting a very significant ceiling on what we can achieve creatively.
Yep.
Because we're starting from zero.
Yep.
Whereas if we start from something, even if that something is altered heavily
yep.
over the course of the shoot, or we end up changing wording or changing setups or breaking it into different things, having that jumping off point means that we start from the 40-yard line instead yep. of the zero.
Yeah. It's like not having a script at all versus having kind of sort of a solid idea panned out
yeah.
and then fluffing it, right?
Exactly.
It's so much easier to fluff an existing script than it is to, you know, create one from scratch 100%. On site, right?
Yeah, if we're doing the what do I stay, where do I stand, like we'll get a good video, but it's not going to be an exceptional video.
Right.
When someone comes in and is like, I want to ride the bike down the trail right. and land at the front of the house. Mm-hmm. Shout out to you, Matt Strait.
Yeah. No, like, honestly, he's been probably our litmus test.
For sure.
For all of this
stuff. Oh, yeah. As far as like giving us curveball ideas yep. that were like, sure. Yeah. Yep.
I remember one time I was in a Rhino side by side with him, and we were literally bombing through the property. We were coming down a very long driveway. We came up over a hill crest. I was flying the drone as he was coming down the hill, et cetera. And we did all of these like, at the time, complicated maneuvers. Right. Mm. And then eventually after doing it the first 2-3 times, something like that, it became old hat.
Yeah.
And old hat in that we were well-versed, and then from there, we did a leg up to the next thing.
Yeah, now you can take bigger swings at things
right.
because you're starting from that place of, all right, we already know this works.
Yep. And that's not just us, but also Matt, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so the ideas build upon ideas.
They do.
And that's the beauty of the creative world.
It is, because even when he comes in with a script, we'll end up changing a tons of things anyways.
And that's what a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
Right? They see the on-camera performance, right? They mm-hmm. see the result, the end result, but they don't know the fact that we didn't do that one try.
No, it's usually many, and sometimes we'll try something. It'll be like, that's too much dialogue for that. Maybe we'll split into two shots.
Right.
And then Matt's like, oh, but what if I do this cool thing? Or
exactly.
What if I fish? And then he'll catch a fish.
Yeah,
and
then on the first try.
We'll just have it. Yeah. And then that ends up in the video.
Yeah,
and
that was that Fitchburg property.
It was
yeah.
never scripted or intended, yeah. but it's because we started with the seed of something.
Correct.
And we're already in the process of executing something
yep.
that we have that ability to improvise more effectively.
We put ourselves in the realm of possibility. and allow the idea to unfold.
For sure.
And that's the wonderful creative edge that happens when you just open yourself up to ideas.
For sure.
Right.
And I love being given that. Like I hear all the time, like, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, or I don't want to overstep, or I don't want to micromanage you or whatever. And it's like, I'll get the negative flip side of that, which is, I don't know, you're the photographer, that kind of thing. And like, I much prefer, like, tell me what you have in mind, please. Cause
it's,
like,
it's not a backseat driving if what they're doing isn't micromanaging. Like, it's if they're micromanaging, you know, then at that point, that kind of commentary is valid. But if they have an inspiration.
Yeah.
Communicate that.
Yeah, 100%. Right? I want to know the idea.
Especially if it's 100%. A shot idea that you don't normally see, right? Whether it be video or photo,
absolutely.
Right? Or if you have this like wacky thing of like, well, so we're doing drone today, but the reason why I'm doing it is because of this thing that you didn't know exists in our neighborhood. And I'd like to just incorporate that into our thing.
For sure.
We might not know that when we fly that drone, we're going to go see that thing. Or maybe we'll see whatever amenity that you're talking about, and we'll just discard it because to us, it might not have the importance.
And to us, it's just a thing.
That's where that communication element really helps out quite a bit. You know, getting back to the very beginning of our conversation, the communication. And sometimes, no matter what we do for question asking, we'll never get the answer that we're looking for because it's just, you know, not in our list of questions. So this is where it comes down to the client making sure that they're preparing themselves with the information that they want to give us.
For sure.
I always prefer
more info. I'm never ever going to say, nah, give me less information.
Yep.
I want to know everything, you know? Yep.
And sometimes that happens at the very onset of the appointment. So I'll sit in for Danielle, obviously, to, you know, cover her for her when she's out. And a lot of times, you know, right in the initial email, the realtor would be like, it's very important that we do X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And we'll just copy and paste that right into the notes.
Right in the job notes. The photographer sees it on the front page when they pull open the job. And then that informs everything they do after that.
Yep.
You know, even if it's just a general style preference or something, that's really invaluable information for us. Cause what we do is subjective to a large degree. Like, there's objective quality standards we adhere to, but a lot of the actual like composing of photographs,
a lot of interpretation,
it's interpretive, and what is right to one agent might be wrong to another. Mm-hmm. And I do sometimes see a misconception among agents that their preference is the industry standard.
Yep.
And I don't think an industry standard kind of vaguely exists.
There's some loose guidelines.
There's some loose things that are relatively consistent.
But such a thing as too wide of a shot.
Right.
Because then you have distortion and fisheye and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Right?
Like when perspective becomes confusing or scale becomes exaggerated or shrunk, then those are all issues. But beyond
the
that,
right way is very subjective.
There's a huge gradient of subjectivity in there. And I do definitely see some agents sometimes think that like their preference is the standard or is the way it should be done.
And also a regional adaptation of that very same preference that might exist somewhere else.
But you know, a colleague in their same office might have a wildly different interpretation of what a photograph should look like.
Yep. Through no influence of the actual brokerage.
Right. Yeah. And they could be in the same town, in the same zip codes, having competing listings, and they just approach
completely
things differently.
Different marketing techniques.
So, and so when those preferences existed, particularly if they're strong preferences, like we always want to know that.
Yep.
Because that's going to, and our people, are, like we train our people specifically to understand the different approaches we'd see. I think we broadly segment them into like real estate, lifestyle, and architecture. Mm-hmm. And each one is, it's kind of a balance of what percent of each is the approach for this house. And having clients communicate that to us up front lets us nail that right at the front rather than having like, well, I wasn't fully happy with this one. Next time, could we, you know, like that's a natural part of it, but we try to avoid that.
Sometimes there's going to be that arc of sorts where we onboard a client and then over time we get used to how that client operates or they get used to how we operate. Cause there is some, you know, there's some expectation versus delivery, right? Yeah. That's going to happen.
Especially if they're coming from like another vendor.
Correct.
A lot of their expectation is going to be tied to what that vendor typically does.
Correct.
And so
that vendor's style approach or their way of not receiving feedback or their way of, you know, maybe staging really heavily versus our light stage, you know, stuff like that. Like every vendor is going to be slightly different or sometimes dramatically different from the, from the other vendor. And so that's sometimes a challenge, to overcome. But many times it's actually a welcoming, kind of challenge where they are very pleasantly surprised as to what they receive in return that they weren't getting before.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of that goes on and we have found that in last year's market where we had a much slower volume base last year. There's been a thinning of agents as a result of all of that, especially the ones that were struggling to begin with or got into the market in 2020, 21, because it was a convenient thing to do because houses were selling like hotcakes, et cetera. Yeah. And so the marketing strategies have changed dramatically since then, in addition to the available volume has changed. And what happened in 2020 and 21 was that there was a lot of photographers that entered the market too. Yep. And so
you're doing weddings. That was a bad time for you.
Correct. So we had a lot of newer real estate photographers who adapted their career paths to include real estate so that they could sustain their lifestyle or they could sustain their needs. And, you know, I'm definitely a proponent in doing that throughout life. I don't look at those new photographers as necessarily competition so much as colleagues in the business. And I think that we embody that with our behavior and our attitude towards our competitors. I'm air quoting this because for those who are just listening on audio, I'm air quoting competition because the truth of the matter is there's enough business to go around. Now, with the sunset of some of the agents that were in the field, leaving the field as a result of the volume, we've also seen a dissipation in the amount of photographers that are available too. Right. And so as a result, we're seeing some people retire from the field entirely just because their age bracket that they're in, moving out of state to quieter or busy areas of the country, changing their demographics, et cetera. And so we're actually internalizing clients now that we weren't before because they had other photographers doing their work.
Right.
And what we're noticing is that there's a certain trend of the way that other people did their work that we're now having to either, re-educate our clients on because of expectations that were set forth by other people. Like, for example, staging, right? When we go into a house, our routine is to take care of blinds, trash cans, fluff some pillows. Yeah. We're not there to move furniture, right? Some other photographers, maybe made it a point to do that as part of their value add package. That's obviously not our market, right? And so there is that expectation reality change that we need to, obviously communicate to clients when they come on board and et cetera. So it's important that those dialogues exist at the beginning. All that to say, it's not a one size fits all.
Yeah.
Well,
and the more expectation we understand going in, the better the result's going to be on the first try.
Because knowledge is power, Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, it is. It's like, because otherwise you're guessing a little bit. And who doesn't want a clean rubric, right? Who doesn't want it? If you do A, B, C, and D, you get an A+.
Yep.
Like, I know I desire that on every shoot. Like,
yeah.
And often we don't have all that, but no. I mean, anything is good. And
every day is a pop quiz.
It is. Yeah. And we often have to react to what we're not really sure. And we have to kind of reverse best engineer guess what we think is going on or maybe, maybe what kind of car do they drive and what kind of market do they exist in? And maybe what might that say about their expectations, but then their expectations could fly in the face of that too.
Correct.
There's a reason stereotypes are generally considered poor practice because you never quite know if that person's going
to
fit.
I mean, for the agents that are listening to this, no two agents are identical.
Not even close.
And neither are two photographers or two photography companies or homes. And they know that too, right? And so this just continues those statements. Mm-hmm. And so the more personalized we can make the product on a per property basis, the better the experience for everybody is going to be involved.
For sure. So, yeah. And if we have info on what you prefer as an agent, then that's something that we can keep internal notes on and that we can make consistent across our staff as opposed to like relying on having to have that conversation on every property.
Yeah. I mean, I see. So we have our backend communication channel Slack, which is a lot like, Microsoft Teams or whatever. And so our communication utility that we use, I'll see just for the edification of our audience, I'll see Dylan or Keith or Crystal exchange information on notes of the client so that when a photographer who's not used to that client works with them for the first time, normally our photographers know enough to say, hey, I've never worked with so-and-so. any special notes. And so you guys usually plug into that and kind of divulge all of those little nuances that we experience that the client themselves doesn't even know about.
It's true.
Right. Yeah. Because we observe, you know,
and again, a client, they're in their world. So to them, like, oh, I like the blinds cocked at a 45 degree angle is just how they do things. But to a photographer, that's like the opposite of what you would normally do.
Right.
Which is to slat them all the way open. Yep. And so those little preferences are easy to go unsaid. Until the photos come back and they're like, why are the blinds all wrong? And the photographer's like, what's wrong with the blinds?
Yeah, exactly. <You know?
laughs> And it's, and those are just little nuances that like,
they're fairly arbitrary,
but they can matter.
Correct.
Especially if, well, and I understand that from the perspective of, if you do something the same every way, you want consistency across your portfolio because a photographer will do that 100%. If they're approaching editing or color grading or the way they compose a certain way, they're going to look for consistency across their portfolio.
Yep.
And I think an agent is probably the same. If they really like their kitchens to be staged a certain way.
If they're looking at it through that lens.
Yeah. Right? And they're trying to populate their website with a bunch of these great photos from kitchens and they want them all a certain way. And then they get one that doesn't fit. Now it's like, well, I can't use that house in my portfolio now. So, thanks, photographer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's so hard, right?
It is.
And there's a statement, there's a saying in the photographer world that, you know, you're only as good as your worst photo.
It is.
Right. And that's probably not too untrue for realtors.
You could do 10 slam dunks and one stinker.
That's exactly it.
Guess which one's going to stink.
Yep.
It's not stink, stick.
It will.
Yeah.
It will. And it'll stick out like a sore thumb. So visually, that has a longer lasting effect than a standalone listing might. Like if you have a bad listing experience, it normally doesn't translate to later experiences because it's kind of like a drop in the puddle, right? Or a drop in the ocean, rather. Whereas if you have a bad listing photograph among a sea of good listing photographs for that one listing, that's a little bit more like a drop in the puddle because then it has a little bit more impact on the opinion of the other photographs.
Right.
And so that's a real challenge because you're working on a micro level at that point with the homeowner. And you, like you talked about, especially with the homeowners that have specific expectations, if they haven't been communicating those expectations to the realtor and therefore to the photographer, that's hard to overcome.
Yeah. And then the waterfall of blame is going to work its way through
the
whole.
Like a lot of homeowners have a very specific pride in very specific things of their property.
For sure. It's a little bit like having, like just putting yourself out there on the internet. Like it's that your house is only one step removed from that. That's your dwelling. That's your life.
Correct.
You know?
Correct. Like, it's very,
you could probably feel a little naked with
very vulnerable
with your life just out there.
You know? Right.
And so,
one of the things that I like to ask homeowners is there anything particular about your property that you specifically enjoy or something that you've done to the property that you're really proud of?
Yeah.
And asking that kind of question normally turns over. Yeah. You know, we just had this, you know, $25,000 landscaping project last year that, you know, we're really proud of the gardens or we're really proud of that, you know, brand new fence that got installed. It could be something that you're just like, you take for granted just because you saw it in passing.
Right. Oh, it's a white vinyl fence.
But to them,
it
meant a large stride in maybe their privacy or maybe they were having a challenge with a neighbor before. And that's something that they were, you know, really.
Yeah. To them, it was a functional upgrade in some
correct,
way. That might not be immediately apparent if you're just cold viewing it.
We are back from technical difficulties.
No, so as I was saying, you know, communication from the homeowner to the realtor and then to the photographer is important, like new appliances. You know, sometimes people maintain their appliances so that they look new. Other times they were literally just refreshed before we got there. And so we don't know these things going into a listing generally unless they've been communicated prior.
Right.
And so having that discussion, you know, for all of those kinds of things, remodeling, fixtures, things of that nature.
Sometimes things that they don't want to show too. Like things that maybe that the agent might not even know and that we'll find out about after we finish the photo shoot and we're wrapping up. They're like, you didn't take the picture with this in it, did you?
Yeah, actually I did.
And we're like, why? And the agent's like, why? And it's something, maybe some sentimental thing they didn't want in it
for sure.
Or something they're embarrassed about they didn't want in it. And,
and
of course we had no idea.
Right.
And neither did the agent.
Yeah. To us, it's just completely, you know, innocent or irrelevant. Right?
Sure.
And meanwhile, to them, it has great meaning.
Yeah.
You know? And then same thing happens with the exterior shots too. Like sometimes there are areas of a yard that might just not be photogenic. And to us, it's just no big deal. Mm-hmm. Or like a water tower in the back of the house. Like how many times have we come across area neighborhood? I wouldn't say amenities, but fixtures or landmarks that, you know, an agent wants to avoid, you know, and that's a little bit of an ethical challenge, right?
This could be tough. It depends what it is. But, yeah. You know.
So I know that on our part, what we do is we normally take shots that include and then also exclude that item and then give it to the agent to do with it as they will. Because from an ethical standpoint, you know, we do believe in transparency in marketing.
There's certain things we won't do because they're just just it's a little blatant,
devious, malicious.
Yeah,
you know. So,
we'll also, you know, we'll do things within reason to
to
emphasize or de-emphasize. But I think that's the key: is emphasize or de-emphasize, as opposed to exclude. You know, like it's usually that's the phrasing I'll take is like, oh, I'll de-emphasize it. Yeah. I'll put it in the background, maybe, or you know, we won't make it prominent, right. But. You know,
it'll be present, just not
for sure.
Super obvious.
Well, and sometimes the desire is I do see this frequently where it's the desire for the thing to avoid. It doesn't like the physicality of it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like maybe the thing is just right on the house or maybe it's the neighbor's house through the window. And
right.
No matter where you photograph it from.
Dylan had a shoot just the other day. He was like, you know, they like try to avoid the pool and shooting from the backyard. You couldn't avoid the pool in order to get the house.
Because it's attached to the house.
Because it was an above ground pool with the deck and all that kind of stuff. And so at that point, you know, you can try to work around it as best as possible, but to strictly exclude something is by and large a lot of times not possible, especially if it's prominent to the house or close to it.
For sure.
You know, so, but, you know, obviously we take all those things into consideration and look at things from the wholeness side of things. Because it is about, you know, the service element, obviously. So, you know, it's an interesting, you know, gamut that we run. Mm-hmm. The technology is always keeping us on our toes and, I'm anxious to see what 2024 does as far as technology changes and advances.
There are probably going to be some really significant ones. I mean,
things are flying.
Yeah. I mean, just the AI tools that are out there now are crazy.
Enormous.
Just the, like, even in just elements like Photoshopping stuff, it's like,
That
what's capable now is kind of mind boggling.
Right. So if you actually, compare that with, like, let's say, for example, when computers first started becoming household objects, right? Yeah. So, I'm dating myself. That's fine. Whatever. You know, you were born in the early 90s?
91.
Okay. So I was born in 81. So you're 10 years younger than I. We got our first household computer in 91.
Yep.
And that was the, I want to say it's called the IBM PS2. And it's not obviously the PlayStation 2. It was a personal computer. And it was like a 486/33. If anybody knows what that even is, mad props. 486 and 33 megahertz was the clock speed. Long and short of it is, within 1 year, that number was completely irrelevant and obsolete. Actually, probably within like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, that was obsolete, the exponential period where it was chips get smaller and faster and bigger and
super
better.
Super fast. Yeah. You know, and then you know, Intel came out and all the kind of, so the advances that happened over a very short period of time in technology during the early 90s.
90 and 2000, like the computing advances were night and day.
Even within a year, it was a completely different tech world.
Yeah.
Right. And so now, obviously, the technological changes from a hardware standpoint are slowing down.
Yep.
And they're diminishing returns. That's where we're at now, unless we get to the next, which is, of course, like quantum computing.
We'll have to have Bill on that episode.
Yeah, right. So the point, though, is that similarly with AI.
We're definitely in that exponential phase.
We are in that exponential
phase. Where every year it's going to be like, hold on, what now?
Yep, exactly.
Oh, my God.
So like, I'm anxious to see what ends up happening from an ethics standpoint. And
there definitely will be a question of when AI is altering an image to a certain point, is that an image any longer?
Correct.
Is that an image of that house or and is that?
I think so. The question that ends up having to be asked is there a way to codify image processing with AI and have legal requirements of it being flagged as such?
Yeah.
So that from an inspection standpoint, it can be told that it is in fact an AI image.
That's certainly something we're going to have to grapple with eventually.
Yep.
Cause the only thing I can compare it to at the moment is virtual renovation, which is essentially you take an image and then you generate another image, which is largely not that image anymore.
Right.
Because you've had CGI elements created to it. But those things are usually visually obvious that is the case.
Correct.
And it's almost always advertised that is the case.
Right. And with, you'll show the before and the after, yeah, right? Or the artist concept, right?
Right. And it's usually abundantly clear that it's a concept rendering mm-hmm. of a to-be-constructed thing, mm-hmm. and it's not an image of the thing that exists in the mm-hmm. world. And I think that AI is probably already is there, to be honest. I think Stable Diffusion could take an image of a house, and you could have it redraw that image with significant alterations to it.
Sure.
And that at that point, is that an image of the house anymore?
No.
I would argue no.
It would be an artist rendering.
Yeah.
Right? But even then, it's an AI rendering.
Right.
And so some liberties may or may not have been taken that may or may not be possible in real life.
And the AI-generated images generally don't have the uncanny, slightly cartoonish appearance that a lot of renderings still hold.
Very much.
They can look absolutely photoreal by default.
Yep.
Which can,
especially of hard physical objects versus soft organic objects,
for sure, because right? they're just pulling elements from images that they have trained on.
Right.
So what they're producing is largely looks like actual photography as opposed to a rendering, and so that does leave us in a situation where like,
what's permissible?
Yeah, I mean, you could in theory just change what flooring the house has, and with AI not being crazy labor intensive, you could change every picture in the house and put them all on MLS.
Yep.
And then obviously people see it when they show up, but
sure.
I mean, you know, that's probably something we're going to have to grapple with at some point.
We will. So. And it's very interesting because a lot of the MLS PIN style aggregators, hosting companies, I guess, they don't have the technology in place yet to police this effectively. I mean, who could? Right?
Yeah.
Like, if Zillow and Realtor.com and Trulia can't, they don't have the arm for that yet.
Nor do they have the incentive to, necessarily.
For sure, right? Because
why are they going to spend all that money developing that system if it doesn't benefit them in any way?
Right.
They're just an aggregator. They can just say, oh, it's the agents.
Right. Like, and so it's going to have to start at the very beginning of the pipeline, which honestly is us and the agent.
For sure.
Right? To ensure that we're following protocol. And those protocols are going to have to get set forth by some governing body. Otherwise, they're not protocols.
It will be the Wild West.
It will
otherwise,
be.
Well, it is it the Wild be. West at present.
Yep. And so I guess that's all to say that, you know, our commitment to our customers are that we're not going to venture down avenues that open doors to some serious investigation like that.
Yeah, like we have ethical limits ourselves, but the you know, there certainly will be people who won't and
who won't share the same vision.
For sure. Who will be like, yeah, I'll alter that thing to be deceptive. Sure.
Sure. And so we're definitely going to have to revisit this as it progresses through,
for sure.
Just like we have everything else. And see how this ends up. And I'm anxious to see, you know, what the next year brings. I'm also hesitant. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's curious. It's, it'll be interesting. I'm like, some of the tools are very useful. I mean, for some simple edits and stuff, like they've been extraordinarily useful. Stuff that used to take like an hour can take 10 minutes now,
right,
which is really nice.
It's been systematized, you know, but you're not manipulating the image so much as you are cutting footage or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not changing the content. It's just simply streamlining your workflow.
Yeah.
Those are fantastic tools.
It is. Yeah. Like a lot, like we've been able to do some of our video editing supplemented with AI, which is really nice because a lot of people are asking for those short form social media reels that are 30 seconds to a minute. And
it's not altering the content.
Right.
It's just simply helping us select those snippets better.
Yeah. And more quickly. And that allows us to offer it at a more reasonable service price,
which is AI as a tool versus
as a crutch or as a replacement. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I'm curious how that all goes. Cause definitely AI is not capable of replacing the video editor. Certainly not.
No.
It's definitely a person still needs to handle that.
Right.
But, it is a good assistant tool for all that. So I'm curious where it goes. I know Stable Diffusion, this is not interesting to realtors at all, what I'm about to say, but I know there's I think Stable Diffusion 4 now is fully video capable, so it can do generative video that doesn't have like the bizarre, uncanny like morphings.
Yep.
Like it can actually make a couple seconds of video that looks like photoreal video, which is a little freaky, but it's here.
It is here. And so
sooner than anyone thought.
So it's a real challenge, obviously, for the ethics of real estate. And, you know, looking strictly at the real estate, there's a lot of trickle down with all of that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's going to have ramifications for ethics in a lot of industries too. Yeah. I mean, if you can just pirate someone's likeness,
I'm
produce video of them.
I'm only looking at that real estate video, right?
And you can produce AI voices that can be trained on a real person.
Very, very.
I've heard Frank Sinatra sing Barney.
It's
going to be weird.
It's going to be weird.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird. So, we're going to hold on.
Yeah. That's all we can do.
Well, that's a good spot to wrap up. Thank you so much for having this very energetic conversation regarding our field and technology and how things are changing, and also being with us on our journey. We cannot possibly do this without you. And so I'm really, really happy to have you on our side versus
the enemy.
Versus the enemy. Yeah, yeah. Our colleagues in the business, as it were. But it's been a great adventure so far, and there's so many miles ahead of us to run. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Thanks, Keith.
Absolutely.